SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough! Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From Churchill Downs, Sirius 219, XM 201, SportsZone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online, and at our website, stevebick.com. And the week has flown by. Let's establish that, first of all. I started printing PPs for the weekend, and I realized, oh, my God, it's the weekend. So here we are at the tail end, and we've got all of Saturday's racing that I wouldn't say it takes precedence, but it certainly runs neck and neck. It's an entry with Derby Oaks fever ratcheting up on a daily basis. And actually, yesterday, pretty much the first quiet day without any declarations, without any jock switches, without any you know, major news. Maybe the weather just sort of clamped down, you know, the way the snow clamped down on those poor unsuspecting daffodils all over the eastern half, not just the eastern half of the country. What am I talking about? Colorado and whatever. What a strange day yesterday, and I'll get to it in a minute, because my day after the show wrapped, I as threatened, got in the car and went up to Shelbyville, and that was an adventure in itself. I'll tell you about Indiana Grand and what a terrific facility they've got, and what a great situation and, you know, future on the horizon. So I want to talk about it, plus the racing and the results too, in that pick five and pick four. And it really was worth the effort for those that, you know, that dug in. So I'll get to that in a minute, along with, you know, with the faces and personalities and everything else that went on. But there's any number of things to establish here, including a quiet morning at the Downs in terms of works and pretty much just galloping going on early and during the training session. The next 2 days, however, tomorrow will be, you know, a start of, you know, the big frenzy and serious final works for everybody, Oaks and Derby intended. And, of course, you know, this is also, it goes without saying, it's also, you know, hold your breath time too. You know, not only is there get through the work and, you know, get whatever air into the lungs that you need for your charge to be ready and fine tuned. But then, you know, cooling out, eating up, wrapping them up, coming in the next morning and making sure that there isn't something that was harbored and was, you know, buried beneath the surface that hadn't made itself apparent. That the day to day, and the closer you get, the more everybody in the barns holds their breath, believe me. And it's getting down to that time when you're a week out. And by the time we draw Friday's card on Monday and Tuesday's draw for Saturday, I think the tension will be at its usual pitch. Certainly around the plant, around the building, they're preparing as if it's a full fledged 160,000 attendee derby. They're not making sort of partial preparations as if there's, you know, a smallish crowd. They're setting the place up as if it's a full-fledged, you know, 2-day extravaganza. So for those expecting, not necessarily sure what, what you're going to encounter, you're going to encounter Derby as prepared as ever. So a couple of things to set up today, and we'll do some of the recap of yesterday, a fireworks day at OBS, things absolutely ratcheting up with seven-figure sellers. And Jessica Martini is going to join us in about 15 minutes. We'll talk to Jess and get the midway report from OBS. Some intriguing themes. A lot of the stuff actually that we touched on going in with Tom Ventura and then yesterday with Sid. So we'll do that with Jess. Dick Powell will be by. We'll do the international report as well. The fallout from the Monmouth, and really not the Monmouth rules, because it's not Monmouth that is at the center of the motivation for these restrictive crop rules, but Monmouth is the one that's going to face the fallout. And I was already prepared to let Tony Black kind of riff, and Tony and I exchanged a bunch of thoughts this morning in preparation for the visit. And as you heard me mention yesterday, that that Joe Bravo had expressed real frustration and disappointment over this, and Joe called me this morning, and it's funny because I had entertained the idea of reaching out to Joe and getting him on. So Joe Bravo will join Tony at the start of hour two, and I can introduce the conversation. I don't think there's much I've got to add to the thoughts of two guys that have won 10,000 races between them. Correct. You heard that right. Yeah, 10,500 races, I think, between them, actually. So Tony and Joe Bravo will walk you through the mindset and why this is so wrongheaded, and it doesn't do anything. It doesn't change any perception about the game from its critics' viewpoint, and all it does is penalize everybody, owner, trainer, better. The three-headed tripod, that's at the core of everything that goes on. Players aren't going to be interested in betting on these races if guys can't and gals can't motivate their horses and utilize one of the most important tools at their disposal. The whole thing is just ridiculous. So Tony and Joe in hour two. 10:30, halfway point this morning. I'm going to introduce a regular segment, and it's a fairly monumental shift. Steve Askin just kind of stepped away, and after literally being involved from the origin of the show, and Steve feels that he's contributed what he can, and the things that he's done for years and years and years, not just here, but he stepped away obviously from regular full-time turf writing to do some of the things he's doing at Secretariat, and just an integral part of everything we've done for years and years. And I have enjoyed, listening even just to Steve and letting him, reflect and opine. So thanks to Steve for, literally 15 plus years. And at the same time, I'm delighted to have the segment is still the turf writing portion of that segment. To me, it was important to maintain. And so with that in mind, 10:30 on Thursdays is going to be thisishorseracing.com live. The Clancys and Tom Law, speaking of three-headed tripods, monsters, three-headed monster, Joe Clancy, Sean Clancy, and Tom Law will provide their unique and typically insightful and poignant approach to the game. And we'll start today with Sean, and they'll mix and match. And, of course, when we get to Saratoga this summer, it'll morph a little bit from thisishorseracing.com to the Saratoga Special, of course. So excited to and pleased to welcome. We've talked to Sean and Sean mostly on the regular basis for years, and Joe on an occasional basis, and Tom just a couple of times actually, I think. So it'll be great to have regular visits with the Clancys and Tom Law. Marty McGee is on the scene today as well. And Marty, typically for years, Marty, would be the Oaks coverage linchpin, and Jay Pribman on the Derby side. Jay not on hand as he kind of hinted last Friday, and or a week ago Monday actually, and so Marty is doing the Derby again, and he did it in September. And interestingly, he'll tell you. It'll be interesting to hear why he says he didn't enjoy it as much as the Oaks coverage, and he said it's just different. Marty must have done the Oaks story for I don't know. I'll ask him about 15 years more. So Marty McGee for. Call it the front half of his Derby visits. All right. And of course, we really have not had a chance to talk to Marty nearly as much as we'd like over the winter. As we've said, two times and once since Gulfstream wrapped up. So Marty McGee today, and then he'll give his final thoughts and selections next week, and we'll get to Rich Eng as well. So a busy morning. The racing side of things, and let me slip in the Indiana, particularly Keeneland yesterday off the turf, and so it was a little bit of a messy afternoon across the state, and at Indiana, the grass hasn't started there yet, so they just had to deal with the wet track, and they had some snow in the morning, but it wasn't the snow that was that was a problem. They didn't train there, but afterward, and when I was driving up, there was hailstorms. I put that on Twitter. Actually, people got a kick out of it. I was, these. It was very strange. It would be sunny, and then there'd be this massive snow squall with hail, and I kept going. I said, all right, I'm going to make it through here, because as soon as the hail would pass, the sun would come out. It was really a strange day yesterday. Then once that got out of the way by fairly early in the card, and things, you know, got into a nice rhythm. I was welcomed at Indiana Grand in a nice way. I literally walked in and the fourth race and watched. I put a picture up, actually, as first off the claim, double advantage, a winner. And Randy Klopp, a horse that he claimed and, you know, promptly wins with, you know, the Klopp horses. I mean, this has been the story of the start of the Indiana meet, just winning, you know, with not with everything, but winning on a regular basis. So I had never met him, only, you know, I had that first phone conversation with him last week off the 3-win opening day success. And so I introduced myself. I said, "Randy, Steve Bick, you know, thanks for last week." And he said, "Oh, it's great to meet." He said, come in the picture." I said, "No." He said, no, come in the." So I wasn't on the grounds. Literally, I was not on the grounds 4 minutes, and I I was in a wind picture. So I'm looking forward actually to ordering that from from Indiana. That started things out. Then I got to spend time, Eric Hallstrom, you know, who I know for several years via HBPA activities and his management career. And then I got to meet people that I've only ever talked to, either professionally or on the air. And Bill Downs, up in the crow's nest. I can't say high atop the building. It's the third floor. But I got to meet Bill Downs, and of course, Bill and I, you know, now in our second season of, you know, of handicapping. So that was fun. Got to watch him call a race, and really that got things going. I got to meet Tammy Knox, who, of course, is you know, a linchpin to activities upstairs in the marketing and communications and management at Indiana. That was great. And Rachel McLaughlin, who's been on a few times and who, you know, has a really terrific outsized presence on the, you know, on the social media front, is constantly, you know, promoting and interacting with players and with fans, and really does a tremendous job. And her, as soon as Oaklawn ends next week, she'll have her partner in crime, Nancy, back as well. So really nice. And then three friends that I've either known through the internet or been introduced to at the racetrack, and our friend Roger Kane, who I've known for years via the internet. He was a partner in Lloyd Dobler for DT, and also oh my gosh, now I'm going to draw. Oh my God, Todd and I want to say Mark. I'm sorry. That's bad. Names can escape. It was really a fun experience, and I'm so glad that I made the effort and committed. Last week when I said it to Bill, I knew once I said it that I would go, and the place. The place is terrific. It's, you know, one of those perfect intermediate-sized modern racetracks. It's got a beautiful backstretch that's, you know, pristine. And on the front side, you know, it's a utilitarian racetrack facility. Nice crowd on hand. They got a beautiful you know, clubhouse grandstand facility. You know, mixed use with you know, sumptuous seating as well as, you know, tables for, you know, for dining, etc. You know, room that, you know, holds 700-800 upstairs. It's really you can understand why, you know, why it's got such a, you know, a positive reputation, and it's got, you know, the devotees that it has, and you know, in proximity, you know, location-wise, you know, 20 minutes from downtown Indy, and it just, you know, easy access. It's got so much going for it, and there's a very bright future at Indiana. There's no doubt about that. And then the casino. I mean, I walked through the casino from the garage. I was impressed. I mean, I'm not a huge casino guy, but really nice. And a sports book, race book, sports bar, really two, actually, one in the center of the room and then a devoted area. And sports betting, and it's happening over there in Shelbyville, let me tell you. And then on the racetrack, a quick survey of what happened yesterday. And boy, I did see that the pick five carryover ended up with a positive return, a positive expectation return. More went back to the players than was bet in, and like a 7% edge for players. So this was perfect. They got 200 and they got about, 4.5 times the carryover. And this was eminently hittable. I skirted it, and I was a little frustrated by my – it was more – it certainly wasn't handicapping. It was a kind of a ticket construction decisions. Cash logistics in the first leg. The first leg ended up being decisive because I had cash logistics as the third choice, as well as Bayou Cat, and I had them as Cs. I was trying to get through with Blue Ridge Mountain, the heavy favorite of Amos's, and I thought that not very gentle was live as can be, and they turned for home, and Terry Pompeo was hugging the rail and shot the gap, and I thought, oh, this horse is going to win. It would have been a $20 start to the sequence, and he just flattened out a little bit, got beat a couple of lengths in the end, but cash logistics for Genevieve Londano ends up holding off, basically kept Blue Ridge Mountain at bay. So it starts out with a 920. So now I'm personally on the defensive. I need all A's to get through from that point and keeping it classy. The Tim Eggleston, Nancy Winchell Homebred, Stay Thirsty gelding, the 5-year-old wins 5-2. Pays a tick under $7. Established ended up being, that's the key to this. That's why it's pretty cool what this thing paid, $970, because you really was a pick four, and Established came through as the single. And the Constitution for Twin Creeks and Mount Brilliant for Mike Stidham, a winner under Rodney Prescott at almost 4-5. And then you had two non-favorites that closed it out, and Bandito de Moors was a B for me, and that, that spelled the end, but certainly the $15 mutual boosted things into the nightcap. And then Bumble of Love, who I think went third choice, went off as the third choice, and one of about four I thought that were more likely than others. But I was nervous in this group. Probably didn't need to be. The closest anybody came that was was more of an outsider was Don't You Remember, who actually took money and went off at 9-2, but ended up fourth and was non-threatening. That very Amelia that I liked, 7-1, and ended up fifth. But Bumble of Love wins, pays $9 for Brian Michael. And that results in a $162 pick four, and the pick five, $971, which was really a nice return for those that took a shot. So I hope everybody did well. It was certainly worth trying, and it's going to be a great meet. The racing is engaging, and they've got, Eric was telling me there's more horses on the way. It's going to be a very, very good meet, and we're looking forward to it. Speaking of meets, and Case, reach out to Jessica. Let's get Jessica Martini in here, and we'll get rolling. Belmont kicks off today. And Pimlico as well. The Pimlico situation, of course, a result of Laurel renovating the main track. And really, it works out fine to have Pimlico at the ready. So really, they just moved over a couple of weeks early. And Pimlico gets used a little bit more. And actually, I imagine that this will be good for everybody going into Preakness Week, you know, to have had some form from that standpoint. Hadn't really thought about that until now, but that is a positive, right? You're going to get a chance to, you know, to have main, particularly the main track. I mean, the grass course is going to be gorgeous anyway. The grass course is when you walk across from the front side to the infield at Preakness, the grass is literally 6 inches deep. It's thick and lush. It's always gorgeous. So it's going to be fun to have a few days of Pimlico to, you know, base your Preakness and Black Eyed Susan days on. So Pimlico today. Also, I should mention, I don't want to forget Lone Star, right? Lone Star today, too, underway as well. So we'll look forward to a lot of this going into the weekend. Tomorrow, weekend preview, brought to you by Twin Spires. And there's also the Fonner Pick 5 force out. And Chris Katulak will join us tomorrow to handicap it. All right? So lots of things happening on the racetrack. We'll look at some of the weekend action. In fact, Pimlico's got, you know, this very good set of stakes this weekend there, including winning your ins for the Black Eyed Susan and Preakness. Golden Gate has got a terrific card. The San Francisco Mile, the Cal Derby, the Cal Oaks, the Lost in the Fog, one of our all-time favorites, and much more. So plenty to talk about on the racing front. Right now on the sales front, Jessica Martini joins us from TDN for a midway report. 2 days of horse sale in the books, Jessica, and some fireworks yesterday.
Yeah, good morning, Steve. It was an exciting day at OBS yesterday. We had a pair of million-dollar horses. We had a quality road colt that sold for $1.5 million and an Arrogate filly who sold for $1 million over the Internet to a Japanese buyer. So an exciting day at the sale, and I think overall it's been a great 2 days of sale so far, and I hope it continues on.
It really, you could tell yesterday, and Sid Fernando and I did just some top line kinds of things, and actually we sort of focused in yesterday on some of the offbeat stallion stories that had, you know, big first days. Some of the big names really flexed their muscles though yesterday, but you could just tell that with that big group of six figure purchases from, let's say, 250,000 to 500,000 yesterday, that really put a nice foundation on things. And then came, you know, yesterday and today, from what I'm sort of seeing and anticipating, should be another big day again.
Yeah, it seems like every year this sale sort of, it starts off maybe a little slower, and it just continues to build momentum as people realize, oh, well, this is the price I have to pay for horses. And it builds and builds to the end of the week. It's been that way the last several years.
One of the things that I thought yesterday was kind of notable on the TDN sale report, things are split up the top, you know, the top colts and the top fillies, and among the top fillies, the top eight knockdowns from $1 million to $365,000 on the bottom end. You had eight different stallions represented. And similarly, the top six males, there were six different stallions. And the only overlap between the fillies and the colts, there were two Arrogates and there were two McLean's Musics. So it seems like a nice, diverse group and a nice mix of top stallions. You mentioned the quality road and a nice mix folding in, you know, the young, solid types like a McLean's Music. And then there's some of these offbeat stories, Jess. Most notably, Midnight Storm is is taking the sale by storm.
Yeah, people are saying great things about the Midnight Storms. He's got a lot of buzz about him for not a very expensive stallion. I think there's also Valiant Minister is one that struck me. He's had a couple good sales already, and he's got a fast worker who sells today. So he's one to keep an eye on, too, for a Florida stallion.
What give us a few of the I've got the whole you and Christie's whole story from yesterday, and there you know there's always a lot of fun backstories, whether it's the breeder, whether it's the sibling strength or the dam strength, and then the consigners and the buyers, and certainly the $1.5 million Speedway purchase. Very familiar. Wasted Tears, who Bart Evans had so much success with, and this a colt that was co-bred with Stonehaven. Tell us about the frenzy to get this horse for $1.5 million.
Well, I thought it was interesting. That horse was entered in the September sale, went through the ring last year, and obviously there was all the uncertainty of the pandemic situation, and the horse drew early in the sale. And didn't meet his reserve. They were really high on him when they brought him up to the ring and were disappointed. The Stonehaven Settings people were very disappointed that he didn't bring his reserve at Keeneland and decided, you know what, we'll partner up with Zimmerich Sales and we'll send him to a two-year-old sales. And they were certainly rewarded yesterday when they got $1.5 million for the horse.
Speedway we're 2 days into this sale and... I don't want to use the trite rich get richer, but I'm guessing this one headed for Baffert.
This is definitely one going to Baffert, as is the session topper from Monday for Tuesday rather. The Gunrunner colt is also going to Baffert, so he's got some more good horses coming his way.
the $1 million Arrogate Philly out of Amen Hallelujah, herself a very nice stakes mare, grade one mare, in fact. And here's Katsumi Yoshida, a familiar name. This was a filly bred by Town and Country and was a fairly modest $150,000 Keeneland yearling last year.
Yeah, that's the way you're going to do it. You should do it. If you're going to pinhook, buy one for $150 and sell it for $1 million. That's a home run, as we say. I think what was interesting about that is obviously there's still travel restrictions in place, and this was a bid that was made on the internet from Japan. So it's good to see that gives people an avenue to bid on horses, even if they're not able to be at the sale. Even going forward, post-pandemic, it's going to be a great option for people to have.
Jessica, do we know who was underbidding and driving these prices in the 2-7 figure sellers?
I don't know for the direct underbidders. I believe West Point was active on the filly, the Arrogate filly, and then they ended up getting the colt instead, and so saved a little money there and got a colt who's a half brother to a graded stakes place horse that they have in Lady Traveler. So they seemed happy to get the colt, but I think they were also on the filly.
Interesting. A couple of other names. Let's hit a couple of these other storylines. And one thing that caught my eye already, and I didn't have a tremendous amount of time this morning to kind of blend, kind of shuffle the deck to put these stories together. But I did notice Michael Talla. Getting that Arrogate in partnership with West Point, and David and Gordo involved here. $750,000 for the Arrogate out of Ask the Question, and of course Mike Talla got to be kind of a big week for big 10 days for him. Buys this one, and of course is part of the group behind Rock Your World.
Yeah, you mentioned also before about the diversity of the stallions. I think it's also impressive the diversity of the buyers this week. It seems like all the top horses are going to different buyers, and that's great to see that the strength in the buying bench.
Kieran Dunn consigned this this Arrogate colt, and Kieran Dunn, in fact, yesterday having both of the second most expensive colt and the second most expensive filly, because here was the Curlin out of Catch the Flag that Norman Cassie signed for $600,000. And, of course, Kieran Dunn was the story coming out of Florida, out of the Gulfstream sale.
Sure, he's having a great spring. He sold the $2.6 million topper at a Gulfstream sale and the $1 million Union or what was it, Uncle Mo at Gulfstream as well. So he's having a great spring.
The and in a couple of, boy, in fact, there's one after another. I see Jacob West for Mike Rapoli on that Union Rags colt out of Champagne Ice. This one that the Robinsons bred, Brandywine and Parker Place breeding, consigned by Topline, $750 for this one as well. And West has had a busy couple of days already.
Right, and that's the horse. That's another horse we talked about, the Quality Road. That R&A'd at September. That Union Rags is another one that R&A'd last year as a yearling during, you know, the height of the pandemic sort of uncertainty, and they decided to bring him back as a two-year-old sales, Peter O'Callaghan, and was rewarded yesterday as well.
And, of course, yesterday when we were doing recapping, West had bought a colt, kind of an oddball, you know.
That's a nice way of putting it. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you who's influenced that is Seth Klarman. Seth Klarman, the last several years, not afraid to buy, you know, the individual, as it were, right? I mean, he kind of set the pace for this. And so here's how Jacob West can go to the Bob and Luana Lowe and say, you know, there's a noble bird I like. Right?
Going to Pletcher. Yeah, exactly. I feel like another guy who does that is John Fort from Peachtree. I often see him signing for out-of-the-box stallions as well.
I'm trying to think, Frisian Fire was a Seth Klarman, and I'm going to forget which, who the runner was, and he was on McLean's Music probably as early as anybody, and helped, you know, helped establish McLean's Music, so... kind of some fun themes. Speaking of McLean's Music, had a colt and a filly, both sides of things. And nice to see Red Baron's Barn, the Rancho Temescal team. That's a major purchase for them, $575,000 for that filly out of Beautified that George Krikorian bred. And this was another big-time pinhook success.
Yeah, and I think the Red Baron people have been active throughout. I think they've made about five purchases so far.
Nice. They some will go to Jeff Mullins, and you know, they've got several. I'm from an observation standpoint, I'm just a fan of theirs. I think they're a cool operation. Mike Ryan, I thought this was interesting. The Don Alberto Into Mischief filly, Jessica, hip 365 out of Versailles Song or Versailles Song, you know, depending on depending
you're
on what part of the world you're from. this is a $500,000 private sale, and was an R&A that Mike Ryan went and went back after, you know, after the ring and made a deal.
Sure, yeah. In fact, that horse sold or went through the ring, I should say, and we all jump up to go find out who it was, and Mike Ryan was among the people asking me, like, did it sell? And I was like, nope. So I'm going to take some commission for that one.
I love it. There was also, I want to mention the $490,000 Run Happy colt bred by William Thompson Jr. And here was another Kieran Dunn handled prospect. Donato Lanny bought for Frank Fletcher. And boy, this horse was the fourth time through the ring for this horse.
Yeah, that was a situation. He was an expensive foal, and they didn't get enough for him at the yearling sale, so they tried again at the two-year-old sale. And Donato's been very active at the sale, bought this one for Frank Fletcher, and said he really has a lot of faith in Run Happy. So he thinks the stallion is coming on, and he looks for this to be a good one.
A couple of other names on the filly side I want to bring up with you, because very quietly so far this now spring, Upstart is doing quite nicely, very quietly. And here was a $450,000 Brary Jones bred out of Who's Been in My Bed. Tom McCrocklin handled, and Spendthrift My Racehorse took this one home.
It's nice to see Upstart starting to pick up a little bit, because everyone has always said nice things about his horses, but he just always seemed to be just almost about to get there. And it's nice to see that he's getting more popular in the sales ring as well.
Well, somebody should name, an Upstart Violet. That would be.
Oh, that would be an awesome tribute, yes. For sure.
In fact, you could name a filly. You could get away with naming a filly Violet. Either way, colt or filly. He missed by everybody. Looking ahead, Jessica Martini with us from TDN. Jess, what these next 2 days? Any hips to watch that you're excited for?
Yeah, I'm very excited for, and actually we talked about Valiant Minister had some nice sales. Yep. Already, and he's got the Bullet Worker from last week, from his day, selling, I think, today with Steve Venosa, and that's one that I'm interested to see what will happen with that one.
Nice. Well, 2 days into the sale, and it feels like a lot of the things that we talked about with Tommy Ventura on Tuesday kind of coming to hand, and the international buyers making their mark, and a very eager set of familiar domestic names. That's actually one thing I haven't seen is any new faces. Jess, have you caught on to any new emergent types?
Not yet. Hopefully we'll see some, because that's always a positive sign to see new buyers getting in the game, but hasn't happened yet. Not that I've noticed anyway.
Interesting. And one question I did not ask about the Norm Cassie purchase. Do we know who he signed for there?
His uncle, Justin Cassie, signed the ticket and didn't want to say who the client was. He said it was a new client for Norm Cassie. He didn't say a new client. So I'm not quite sure what that means, but he wouldn't say who the client was.
But, okay, all right, so it's
new to him,
right?
Not necessarily to us.
Yeah, I'm always reminded of the NBC, the very clever advertising that they would do during the summer, summer
if
sweeps.
If you haven't seen it, it's new to you.
Exactly.
Yeah, something like that.
I love it. Jessica Martini and OBS, as Tom noted, they had plenty of trouble getting through the Breeze Show, but not having any trouble sending these 2-year-olds off into the world with new connections.
Yeah, it's been a great week so far. Hopefully that continues.
Well, we'll be watching for you and Christy, and all the stories every angle is covered by Jess and Christy, and it's fun reading too, because you learn about the consigners, you learn about the breeders, you learn about the families, and you learn about the trainers, and really everybody involved. It's one of our favorite, always one of our favorite times of the year, and tracking these storylines. Jess, as always, appreciate it very much.
Thanks, Steve. Good to talk to you.
Jessica Martini and the TDN coverage. And you follow Jess, if you don't already, you should. Jessica Martini is Jess Martini TDN on your Twitter stream. And as we say, it's always the right time for a martini when it's Jessica Martini. I don't have nearly as cute and clever a handle for Dick Powell, who joins us now. Dick, good morning.
Cute and clever. Not in the same sentence as me.
Well, you're not. Well, we don't think of you as a prickly pear, but cuddly. Yeah, cuddly doesn't necessarily. too funny. Dick, good morning.
Steve, good morning. And we're getting closer to Champions Day, which will be Sunday morning, 12:35 East Coast time. Three big races. Before we get to that, I'll quickly go over the last couple of days of racing. Yesterday at Happy Valley, no favorites won, which is not unusual for Happy Valley, but every winner was makeable. They were all single-digit odds, at 8-1, 9-1, stuff like
yeah.
that. So they were makeable. They weren't, you know, head scratches. But just none of the favorites were able to get the job done. And at Chatin last week, when they ran that mixed meet with five all-weather races, the last eight favorites were beaten. And there was only one winning favorite, Chatin, on Sunday. So we're now on a streak of 0-17 with favorites going into this weekend. And Casper Founds, who was the leading trainer, is now second in the standings. He is still 0-63, which is just
wow.
unheard of for a trainer at that level to go this cold over this long a period of time. So that's just remarkable. He's still the leading trainer at Happy Valley, which has always been his forte, but not by as many wins as he would normally be. So he's just ice cold. Zach Purton continues to be red hot. He's 18 out of his last 80. He was the leading rider last week with four wins. He's now cut the 30-win deficit behind Joe Marrero to 14. So is it possible? Yeah, unlikely. But the reality is, whether he's going to catch Joe or not, Zach is riding at almost a 25% win clip. It's just outrageous. So whether he gets there or not is, you know, pari mutuel, who cares? But Zach is riding out of his mind. So he's just hot as could be, and just continues to chip away a couple winners every week and see what he can do this coming weekend. So Sunday morning, we're at Chatin. We have three group ones. The first one is the Chairman Sprint Prize. This, as expected, is 1,200 meters. It drew a field of, check, 13? Yes. Nice, strong field, headed by the Japanese star, Bannon Smash. I don't know if you noticed the pictures that they've been sending out, Steve, in their press releases, but there was a picture of Bannon Smash being walked. Not actually not walked. He had Joe Marrero on him. But he almost looked like Zenyatta, where he had that stiff left
yeah.
leg and his head all the way down.
Yep.
And the picture is tremendous resolution. So when you blow it up, you see his tongue is almost licking his knee. And he's impressive. When you look at him, it's like, well, I see why he's the leading sprinter in the world. He won in December in the Longines Hong Kong sprint. Then he went back to Japan and won a group one there, going left-handed. So he handles all ground, all directions. He's by far the leading sprinter in this field. Not to say that he lays over the field, like someone we'll get to in a minute. So I am going to go with Bannon Smash. He just comes into the race in great form. He does get Joe Marrero. Very few of the Japanese riders came. They didn't want to go through the quarantine lockdown. So a lot of the local riders are picking up big mounts. So Joe gets this one, breaks from post five, and he has speed. He won't be far back. Even though his last race in Japan, he came from far back. He'll probably be mid-pack stalker and big run through the stretch. So Bannon Smash is the clear leader as far as talent in this race. Exacto, we'll go with Wellington, number six. He's a four-year-old. he's just getting better and better. He had been running class twos, and then he moved up to class one. Then he ran in the Sprint Cup, group two, back in April 5th. He ran well that day, had some trouble, but on his best day, he's capable of going 107 and change, and that's probably what it's going to take to win this race, 108 flat at the minimum. So Wellington is an improving four-year-old, and on his best day, he has that bullet in his holster to take on these type horses. So we will go with the one, Bannon Smash, and the six, Wellington. Please note, all these horses are carrying level weights. Unless, as we'll see in one of the other races, but we have some fillies. They're all carrying 126 pounds. So no handicap race here, which certainly benefits Bannon Smash. It would be a pretty high weight. So 1-6 in the Chanman Sprint Prize. That'll be race number five. Race seven is the Champion's Mile. And it didn't get the Japanese Shippers. And one reason it didn't get the Japanese Shippers is the presence of Golden 60. He's won 16 out of 17. His last 13 straight races. He's one of the highest rated horses in the world. I think he's only 2 pounds below the high weight in the International Federation of Horse Racing Authority ratings. Golden 60 has been winning very close races. And I was curious to see if anyone really had a shot because, you know, that margin of victory, and it doesn't take much for one little misstep, and you're on the other side of that margin of victory. But in this field, he's going to be off the pace. Vincent Ho is going to just let him settle. Small field, doesn't have a lot of traffic to go around. And he just looks too tough to beat. So we'll obviously go Golden 60, and we'll just play it straight exactly with the number three, Tying Star, who looks like the horse to catch. He's kind of more of a 7-furlong horse than a mile. He's won at a mile, but he's actually won 6 times at a mile. But most of his better races were a little bit shorter. But he will be the one to catch. And I don't see him having a lot of pace pressure on him. So Zach Purton can get him out, get him on the lead, get him relaxed. Remember, this is a one-turn mile. They're going to start down the backstretch and only go around that one right-handed turn. So Tying Star should have the lead turning for home, and then he just has to brace for the challenge of Golden 60. And number two, great old-timer, Southern Legend, who that would get Cast of Sounds off the Schneid if he were to pull off this one. But Golden 60 just looks too tough. He scared away a lot of the competition. He's beaten these horses before. So parimutuelly, not the most exciting race. We'll just try to see if we can get a 1-3 exact to home, and if it's going to pay anything more than $10, I'd be very happy. So that's the Champion's Mile. The QE2 Cup is race number eight. This is a mile and a quarter, and this drew a very strong contingent of international horses from Japan. Now, Glory Vaz has been... I don't know if he's been ruled out completely, but actually, I got a note here. Worked this morning, was found lame. That was on Tuesday or Wednesday. I don't think things have gotten any better for him. So that's too bad. He's a nice horse, and he's run well in Hong Kong before. But naturally, we are getting informed on a real-time basis of what his condition is, and if he can go, he can go, and if there's anything wrong, he's not going to go. So if he's in the gate, you can bet your bottom dollar he's sound and healthy, but at least you know firsthand that he's had some soundness issues coming into the race. He is the highest-rated horse in the race based on his Japanese record, and he's won... He's won in Hong Kong before in his only start. So I'm gonna try to beat him with number six, Daring Cat. She, 4-year-old filly, won the Filly Triple Crown last year while undefeated. And that's a new one for Japan. And then she finished up her year with a terrific third, only beating a length and a half by Almond Eye, going a mile and a half. She was far back, made a nice run. Contrail was second, and he was the male triple crown winner last year. So Daring Tack has been in against top company, shortened back to a mile and a quarter, and has a race, a Group 2 over in Japan, where finished second by a neck as the 7-5 favorite. So he has that race off on the hub belt. Now she makes her second start off the layoff. Japanese trainer, Japanese rider is in for the ride. And based on class and form, she looks awfully tough in here. And getting 4 pounds, 122 pounds, seeing that she is a female taking on boys. So we'll try to get a little bit. I don't know what kind of price we're going to get, but it should be, she shouldn't be favored. That's number 6, Daring Tact. And then I'm a sucker for anything by Deep Impact. Number 7, Love's Only You, is a daughter of Deep Impact, a 5-year-old mare. Never raced in Hong Kong before, but her Japanese form is very good. Has a nice Group 2 win, 2 starts back, going a mile and 3/8. And that was on Good the Firm, which when you look through these horses, you really want to see form on good and firm turf courses, because the yielding stuff, you know, courses that you're going to see in other countries, you're just not going to get in Hong Kong. I don't think we've had a meet all year that was anything worse than good. So this one looks like it fits. Deep Impact out of a Stormcat mare, nothing wrong with that. And I think she can get a nice stalking trip with Vincent Ho. Now, Vincent Ho has to ride on Golden 60 in the Champions Mile. So this could be a really historic day for him, getting a real live mount in the $3.2 million QE2. So in this race, we're going to go with the 2 females, 6 Daring Tack, and 7 Love's Only You. So that's the 3rd of our 3 Group 1 stake races at Sha-Tin this Sunday morning.
Excellent, and we should also direct people to the, you know, to the micro site to get ready for this.
Yes, just go to hkc.com. Click on English, and it sounds no kidding, Dick. But if you click on translation, you get a totally different version of English. In other words, when the Chinese is up there. And there's a button that will say translate. When you click on that, it's very different than clicking on English. So always click on the English role like you do, hkjc.com/English, and we got nothing to worry about. On that main page is the microsite with all sorts of details and tremendous data and everything on the 3 international races. So
yeah, it looks terrific. It's a little box, and there's a orange and green-ish FWD horse logo, and just click on that, and it's all laid out there for you. The post times, just looking for the post times.
The 8th race is 4:30, the 7th race is 3:55, and the early one, the sprint, is 2:50. So with my bladder speed, I might be able to make one or two of these. I don't need an alarm clock. I'm an old guy.
Too funny. The last of the biggest, really, the biggest sequence here. As we move in well into the second half of the season at Hong Kong, and I, for those that may have seen it, you know, yesterday after Happy Valley was wrapping up, the guys that are handicapping using form to win are having a ball. Saturday night, Sunday morning, and Wednesday mornings, they're using the form to win. You just switch over to the Australasia version, and it you know, even if you don't want to adjust the distance, it'll give you an edge because these horses are so formful. It really is a helpful snapshot, especially if you're, trying to parse out, last couple of, if you're putting multiple horses together, like Tommy Massis going after the seven figure, pick eight score. It's a good way to help you identify, candidates that you may, that you might otherwise not be aware of. So, Dick, in addition to this, obviously next week, you'll have analysis, obviously at BrizNet, but before we break, any early Derby thoughts or observations as we move closer?
I'm trying to get away from being a slave to post positions and track condition and all those things. I'm trying to just, I'm watching replays over and over again, and they draw the races on Monday, and I will have most of my write-up done before that. Yes, things can dramatically change, but with the new starting gate, the 20-horse starting gate, which doesn't have that gap between 14 right. and 15, and doesn't penalize the one the way it used to, and things like that. I let horses like Big Brown and Country House and horses breaking from the 20 get by me, and more on visual stuff, trying to follow workouts, which has been kind of sporadic. I would have thought last weekend would have been the big weekend for workouts, not this coming weekend.
I know. That is a little surprising. I agree. I completely agree with that.
So that kind of set me back because I'm thinking, boy, I'm going to watch all these workouts and see who I like. And that wasn't the case. I will say I think Todd Pletcher is sitting in a really good spot. Todd is just—they've come around at the right time. You don't win the Derby in February; you win it in May.
Well, and it's funny you say that because John Nichols and I, Todd came up this morning. In fact, he's got even before we get to Saturday, he's got the big filly. Malathat, pretty imposing out there. She may be a kind of a woman among girls right now.
Yeah. It's just that race always concerned because if it is crazy speed favoring, then mile and an eighth is, very, very dangerous. The mile and a quarter, at least, that extra furlong kind of separates the horses that don't want to really get the distance. But I like this Derby, even though there's no stick out. It's not one of these Derbies where I'm trying to beat the favorite and find fault with the favorite and then look elsewhere. I'm just trying to balance who do I think has the best chance at a reasonable price.
Yep, which is feels like
the hardest every year, Steve. The hardest thing to do is to pick the favorite.
Yep.
I mean, we never get that right.
Well, and at least in that vein, the last 7-8 years, and everybody cites the move to the point system as. I don't want to call it a culprit, but, as having culpability. And, whether that's true or not, we have had a run. I mean, where the favorites have done very, very well. And, I do see that everybody, this theme keeps coming up. I'm anxious to hear from Marty McGee later. Everybody acknowledges what a nice horse essential quality is, and then in the next breath say, I can't you know, key him essentially under this circumstance, because he hasn't really, he doesn't seem to have distinguishing features that elevate him, you know, above this field.
True, but what I love with him is he, especially with Louis riding him, he has tactical speed. Mm-hmm. Louis uses it. So a 20-horse field, he's not running against a 20-horse field. He's running against a 5-horse field because he's exactly. Not going to be back amongst the 20. Yep. And that's a great talent to have going a distance of ground.
Dick, I appreciate it. Looking forward to talking next week. And Dick's full analysis for Oaks and Derby will be at BrizNet. So, you know, it's a little unfair to ask. I usually end up asking Dick more, you know, pacey questions and more esoteric type stuff because people are paying for the analysis. So we won't, you know, can't give it away. But we'll find plenty to talk about.
Definitely. We always do.
I appreciate it. HKJC.com, everybody, and Champions Day coming up in the morning hours on Sunday and late Saturday night on the West Coast. The stars, you know, they keep coming out. Let's take the break right here because Joe Bravo and Tony Black are going to join us. The Monmouth situation is the topic, obviously. And, you know, Tony, as a veteran, mostly retired, has got his perspective. And Joe, as a very active rider, moving towards 6,000 wins, Joe is, you know, particularly disturbed by this and the prospect of not having his tack at the site of Jersey Joe's exploits. I mean, they don't call him Jersey Joe by accident. They call him Jersey Joe for a reason, because he's won all these races in Jersey. Back after this, hour two, we're live at Churchill. It's Sean Clancy, and this is horseracing.com, joins us later in the hour. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.